This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Jeff Looney is the editor of the retirement series in the papers of Thomas Jefferson at Monticello, and he joins me on occasion with some insights into Thomas Jefferson. Jeff, how are you doing? It's good to see you.
Great. Good to see you, too.
Now, the occasion for your visit is the publication of Volume 6 of the Papers of Thomas Jefferson, Retirement Series, and this covers the period March to November of 1813, and this is hundreds. How many is it? It's 516 documents.
Mm-hmm.
Covers this one period. Not all letters by him, of course. A lot of letters to him.
Right.
But the majority of these are his own letters, right? I mean, this is amazing.
Well, it is. It's an amazing thing that it takes this many volumes to get us from here to there. But it's full of very rich and interesting stuff. I don't suppose any editor any more than any father should love their volumes more than any individual volume more than they love their children. But this particular volume is full of great, great stuff.
Yeah. Now, this period in his life in 1813, from the spring to the fall of 1813, bring us up to speed and put this in a larger context. He had left the White House in 1809, right?
Right. He's been out of office for 4 years, and he's not going to go back to office, even if they ask him. He makes that very clear. But right now, the nation's at war, and so he's dealing with a lot of problems in terms of just economics. You can't sell your crops. They're also in the middle of a really serious drought, and so there's a lot of complications in just his financial and legal life at this point as a result.
Yeah, so we're at war with Britain. The War of 1812 was still raging in 1813, of course.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to go on in 1814, not in this volume, but the next. The British are going to burn Washington. But at this point, it's further afield than that, but the British have the Chesapeake Bay fully blockaded. So one of the more interesting sequences of letters we have here is three really long letters he writes on the subject of political economy. He's really worried about all the debt the nation's piling up because he hates public debt.
Yeah, yeah.
So he writes this really a series of letters to try to figure out how we can get all the debt repaid within one generation because he argues that it's immoral to pass on debt to the next generation. And he actually even has these long calculations to figure out exactly how long a generation is. So he can figure out how long it's kind of moral to wait till you finish repaying the
debt.
How
much time do we have to pay this off?
Oh, it's 20-some years. But he actually gets some demographic statistics and figures out how long people live, and so he can figure out how long a generation would last.
Was there any concern with the British blockading the Chesapeake Bay and at war and British troops on Virginia soil? Was there any concern that they would go after Jefferson again as they did back in 1781?
I don't think I see that as a concern. A little bit too far ashore, and I think the greater concern is what's going on in the bay, and especially bottling up everybody's produce, so nobody could get any of their tobacco or wheat out.
Yeah, and he's up at Monticello, living there, and pretty much of a pastoral life. Is that right?
That's right. He spends almost all of his time in Monticello, but during this period he has three visits to Poplar Forest, and he does tend to get down there three or four times a year for much of this period for quiet reflection more than anything.
Yeah. We're talking with Jeff Looney. He is the editor of the Papers of Thomas Jefferson, the Retirement Series, a fantastic project at Monticello. Volume 6 has just been released by the Princeton University Press, and it covers the period March to November 1813. And, of course, for all of us here in Charlottesville, we should remind folks, this is before he got involved in what would become the University of Virginia, just before that.
Yeah, just before. Stay tuned for Volume 7, where he's going to be involved in starting to convert the moribund Albemarle Academy into Central College and later the University of Virginia.
And that will come. Yeah.
That's coming up.
So let's talk about this period, March to November 1813. Tell me some of the things that really jumped out at you. Whether it was letters by him or letters to him that you think folks would find really interesting.
One of the best sequences of documents in the volume is a large group of letters between Jefferson and John Adams. That's probably the most concentrated group of his letters for the retirement, maybe ever. There's 25 letters by Adams during this period and 5 letters back from Jefferson, or 6 letters back from Jefferson. And that's a ratio that's pretty heavily skewed towards Adams. But as Adams said at one point, Jefferson shouldn't worry about this because three of his are worth one of Adams's, or the other way around. So the there are letters that I really found fascinating because these two tough-minded old guys were talking with themselves about religion and philosophy and politics and economics, and they're not afraid to say much of anything. There's one point where Adams says that neither one of them believes in the Trinity. They both kind of make fun of the Trinity because these are mathematical kind of guys. And they say, Jefferson says, there's just no way one can be three and three can be one. And Adams says, God could perhaps scare a rational man into saying that two and two is five, but he would never believe it. This is the way these guys think. There's also a great letter where Adams writes to Jefferson and says, I've heard that there's this guy in Germany who's saying that we've got the wrong Ten Commandments. So he writes in this letter, saying, here's what this guy says the Ten Commandments are. He's really fascinated by this. And I said, what kind of evidence do they have on that? So they're really, really challenging and interesting letters on just kind of everything under the sun.
When did he write? When would he sit down in his office and sit at that little machine and write these letters?
General sense is that he does it in the morning, very early in the morning. He was very proud of the fact that for many, many years, he had always been up ahead of the sun. And I think he would make his own fire and he'd sit in there and work. And I think that's when he got most of the writing actually done.
Yeah. We're talking with Jeff Looney of the Papers of Thomas Jefferson. You can learn more online at Monticello.org and just drill down into the research and collections, and you'll find your way to this magnificent project. It's the retirement series. It covers the period after Jefferson leaves the White House in 1809 and returns to Charlottesville. And he never traveled again, did he? Except to go down to Poplar Forest. He never went to Europe again. He never went on any big adventure, even though it was quite some time. He was here for a long time.
Yeah, well, after March 1809, he never leaves the state of Virginia again. He makes a couple of trips to a lot of trips to Poplar Forest and a few from beyond that to Natural Bridge when he had some friends with him, which, he owned Natural Bridge. He makes a trip or two to Richmond and, of course, the trip to Rockfish Gap, where they figure out how they're going to plan the university. But really very little travel. He's very happy to be at Monticello, and he's in Poplar Forest. He doesn't have any plans beyond that.
So what else is in this particular time period?
Well, we've got a continuing stream of inventors sending him great ideas they've got of one sort or another. And one of the things we try to reproduce in the volume is a lot of the drawings. So in this particular volume, we've got a letter about underwater explosions from Robert Fulton, who later develops a steamboat. And in this particular case, we've got 11 drawings reproduced that show cannon and so on underwater. And it's kind of every boy's dream, I think, is this chance to blow up stuff underwater. Yeah. And in this case, Robert Fulton is able to do it. And so he's got these beautifully detailed drawings showing the cannonball going underwater and hitting the planks and blowing them up. And we've got several others. Of course, we're during the war, so people are trying to figure out how to get the British. And one of the main ways is to use underwater mines of one sort or another to take ships down.
What's this about a UFO? Did Jefferson see a UFO?
No, this is a letter. We put a featured letter up every few months on the Monticello website, and we chose one from this volume that just goes online today. And this is a letter in which two men in Portsmouth write to Jefferson and say, we just saw the most amazing phenomenon. We thought you might want to know about it. We saw this ball of fire in the sky, and this ball of fire gradually over time moved, and it turned successively into a turtle, and then into it looked like a human skeleton, and finally it looked like a Scotch Highlander marching in the sky, and finally it disappeared. And so this may be the earliest recorded UFO sighting in Virginia, and we thought that would be a good featured letter. So and it shows how interesting some of the incoming stuff is, as well as the letters Jefferson writes. Though maybe unsurprisingly in this case, Jefferson didn't actually respond to this letter. They don't actually ask him anything. They just say, you need to know this. And so he didn't have to respond, and he didn't. But it's still a fantastic letter.
Ah, that's great. So he also writes about patents in this, which it's really interesting. He was not, of course, a fan of patents, was he?
No, he wasn't. He believed in their value, but he also believed they should be limited as much as possible. As our first Secretary of State, he actually set up the first patent board and was known for kind of looking at each individual patent and trying to determine whether it really was original. And he would do all this research and set the thing up in the offices of the Secretary of State and say, well, actually, there's an ancient Greek precedent for this, no patent. And eventually that just had to collapse of its own weight. Nobody had the time for that, so they turned it into a different system. But he becomes involved in this in the next volume in a dispute involving Oliver Evans, who was this great miller, about whether how far his patent should run. And Jefferson always argued that it had to be very narrowly circumscribed, both in what it applied to and how long it would last. In a different kind of invention, we've got Jefferson writing a really long and interesting letter about neology. Jefferson likes new words. In fact, he coins the term for new words, neologism. And so he writes this letter where he explains that he thinks that you should never try to freeze a language like maybe the French were trying to do at the time. He says this gives it strength and vitality, and he's all in favor of it. And this letter he writes explains at great length why ancient Greek is good in this way, and even has some words in Anglo-Saxon. In fact, both with that letter and with the letters from John Adams, we have more Greek in this volume than we've ever had before and may again.
Oh, what fun.
Well, it is in some ways, but we had to figure out how to do Greek, which wasn't fun at all.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You don't read Greek, do you?
No, we got very good assistance from a professor at the University of Virginia for that. But what's interesting about this, we've got Adams and Jefferson, I think, doing some intellectual one-upsmanship, or trying to. So they each sort of start describing a more and more obscure classical source they've seen, and the other then has to come back with an even more obscure classical author he's read.
We're talking with Jeff Looney of Monticello. He's the editor of the Papers of Thomas Jefferson, the Retirement Series. Volume 6 has just been released from Princeton University Press. It's gorgeous. I told you this when you came in, but Jeff, this is beautiful. I mean, the book itself is really nice, and folks should know that these cost about, what was it, $80, $90?
It's a bit more than $100, but they are huge, important reference works and well worth it, we think.
Yeah.
But this is actually in the same typeface and design that the original Jefferson Papers still being published in Princeton have. So it's very consistent with the pre-retirement years. And it's won a lot of awards for design over its many years, and we think it's just a fantastic look and feel that we're very proud to continue moving along.
Now, I didn't know until this volume came out in this letter here about sheepdogs. I didn't know, I guess I never really thought about it, but that there were dogs at Monticello and that he actually had a favorite kind of dog.
Well, indeed so. And in fact, we're very pleased with this letter in some ways, because there's an earlier letter in which Jefferson expresses his eternal hostility to dogs. But that's Jefferson sometimes indulges in overstatement. And we know from this letter, this is a very, very affectionate letter about sheepdogs and how intelligent they are. And he says, well, you have to take good care of them or they will go bad because they're smart enough not to starve. But he says they're very friendly and good, intelligent and good dogs. And he clearly had them on the estate and thought very highly of them. And he's asked regularly by other people to supply them with a pair of these dogs for their own.
So then Monticello had a reputation for good sheepdogs then.
It did indeed, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So where do we go from here? You had said before, you were telling me before we went on the air that Volume 7 is actually done. It's being edited and reviewed and copy edited.
Yeah. It's in press now, and that'll be probably about a year from now. I'll have Volume 7 out. But Volume 7 gets us much further into the War of 1812, toward the end, and that includes the news of the burning of Washington. And late in that volume, we have an editorial note describing Jefferson's offer to sell his library to the nation, which, of course, is the first movement towards the Library of Congress becoming an outshoot of Jefferson's library and a much more important intellectual institution than it had been before.
Yeah.
We've also got, as we said before, the minutes of the Albemarle Academy and just all kinds of really interesting documents, again, relating both to the war and Jefferson's life and the people writing to him on everything under the sun.
Did President Madison seek advice from Jefferson during the war?
They were very careful, I think, not to make it quite like that. But Madison and Jefferson correspond very regularly, and they get together whenever they can. I think there was a sense of propriety and discretion that didn't have either one specifically writing back and forth saying, what should I do about this or that?
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, these letters about political economy I mentioned from this volume, Jefferson does not send them to Madison, but he sends them to his son-in-law who's in Congress, and he's on the Ways and Means Committee. And gradually they worked their way around to where cabinet members were seeing them. And probably Jefferson knew they might reach Madison and he'd be okay with that, but less directly. He didn't want to seem to be offering advice out of turn.
What was the goal of the British during that war? To take America back? Was that it? Was this the second American Revolution we had to fight again to ensure victory? Were they here to, or were they here just to crush this and ruin this new country?
Well, let's not forget that we declared war on them. And we did so because of neutrality issues more than anything. The war is really part of the broader Napoleonic Wars. But unluckily for America, when they knocked out Napoleon, then they could give their full attention to America. And then I think they were going to try to show us a lesson.
Yeah.
And that's, Burning Washington's part of that, I think.
Jeff Looney is the editor of the Papers of Thomas Jefferson, the retirement series. You can learn more online at Monticello.org. Volume 6 has just been released. It covers the period March to November of 1813. How can folks get this? Buy it online? Is that your best advice? Or?
You can get it off the Monticello website. I'm assured that there are copies in the Monticello Visitors Center, the store there, and you can get it through Princeton Press as well.
Terrific. Jeff, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.